This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Our topic is employment law. We're focusing on discrimination in the workplace and how the state of California deals with discrimination. My guests are members of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, Chaya Mandelbaum and Joseph Ortiz. Chaya is also chair of the California Fair Employment and Housing Council, and very recently, Joe has become a member of the Housing Council. Chaya Mandelbaum is also a partner in the San Francisco law firm of Rudy Axelrod Zief and Lowe, and Joe is a partner in the Riverside law firm of Best, Best, and Krieger. Great to have both of you on the program with me. Your Legal Rights is funded by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California, by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and by the National Board of Trial Advocacy. And it's terrific to have you both here. Let's do this. Joe, you've just become a member of the council. What have you done that's been so wonderful that you would be a member?
Well, good evening, Chuck. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Of course, you'd mentioned before, I'm part of the Labor and Employment Executive Committee, the section of the California State Bar. I'm an active member of my community. I'm an employer-side attorney, which means the majority of my practice is employer representation. I applied for the position. First, let me back up. I'll say this. When I mentioned to Chaya that I had been appointed, I said, look, this is the kind of thing that people dream about when they go to law school, doing good work for the community. So I'm a big believer in civil rights, but I also want to make sure that I can contribute not only from my geographic region, but also from my perspective as an employer representative. So I'm active both with the State Bar, but also a number of different entities in my community, so everything from Riverside Legal Aid to Inland Empire Latino Lawyers Association. I'm also a first-generation immigrant. I was born in Guatemala, so I think I have an interesting perspective when it comes to civil rights and discrimination issues. So hopefully that's why the governor thought I'd be a good fit, and I'm hitting the ground running, making sure that I can give my input where necessary on these new regulations that are coming out.
Now, Chaya, what's important about the council?
Well, the council primarily drafts regulations to all of California's civil rights statutes, so employment discrimination, housing discrimination, and these are topics that small businesses and larger ones and employees alike generally understand the bare bones of discrimination law, right? We know that people can't discriminate in hiring decisions on the basis of protected categories. But where the regulations come in is playing out how these discrimination laws apply to a bunch of complicated, specific situations. And that's why it's imperative that we have input from all perspectives, and why I'm particularly excited that Joe's on the council bringing his various perspectives and, in particular, his representation of employees.
So the council, both of you were appointed originally by the governor.
That's right.
So that is how someone becomes a member of the council here, the California Fair Employment and Housing Council. So this is a government, this is a California government council.
That's right.
That's
correct. Yeah. Not a private thing. This is not some kind of an employer's thing or an employee's thing. This is a government council.
That's right.
Okay. All right. I know you want to talk about some things that are very important here. And you told me as we were preparing for this that apparently one-third of Californians, one-third of the population of California, adults apparently, have some kind of a criminal history, and that this is something that is a significant issue in the employment area. Chaya, tell us a little bit about this, will you?
Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, there's a tremendous prevalence of some amount of criminal history in people's lives, but whether that's arrests, convictions, past crimes. And so the issue of how that impacts people in employment situations and hiring decisions, it touches a lot of different people in California, and that's not even mentioning their coworkers or their families. So the council has drafted regulations that become effective July 1st that really get at this issue, the issue of what types of criminal history employers can use and in what context in making employment decisions.
So we don't have that right now.
Well, there are various laws that in California that answer that question for us to mm-hmm. some degree. So, mm-hmm. for instance, California employers are not allowed to consider past arrests that didn't lead to conviction or recently juvenile convictions or things that happened in juvenile.
So in other words, if a juvenile was convicted of something, could it have even been a serious crime as a juvenile being convicted?
Well, yeah, if they were, I mean, some juveniles are charged as adults in certain contexts,
well,
and then
yeah.
you have an adult criminal history.
Sure, but let's say that's not the case. So if it was a serious thing, such as theft or burglary or whatever, as a juvenile, and not charged or not prosecuted as an adult, is that something that cannot be used today by an employer?
That's right. There's a brand new law passed by the legislature. This is not a regulation. That takes that off the table, essentially. And I think the impetus to push in this regard is people recognizing that while criminal history in the right context can be a very important consideration for employers, that it's being overused, that employers are not, by and large, looking at it with the narrow tailoring that it deserves in certain contexts, or at least some employers. And it obviously it can be a tremendous contributor to things like recidivism. If someone gets out of jail, or maybe they weren't in jail, but they're righting the ship, so to speak, and they can't get a job, well, that becomes hard to do.
Right.
Joe, as an employer, as an attorney for employers, how do you feel about this, the new regulations that are effective July 1st of this year?
Well, I was, in fact, going to chime in and just kind of echo what Chaya said. I think it's fantastic that we have clean guidelines. I'll say this from the employer's perspective. I see a lot of good-hearted individuals with, you know, conservative values that, frankly, overuse criminal history.
Mm-hmm.
They'll
mm-hmm.
see something with a criminal history, and their immediate jump to is, well, I don't want to hire this person. Let's find a reason why. But, you know, the reason why this is under the heading of the Fair Employment and Housing Council, frankly, is because the EEOC and other courts really have looked at this and said there are certain protected groups that have disproportionate convictions, and to the extent a conviction has no bearing on the job duties, why are employers free to just simply not hire the individual? Well, you know, the take is they're not. So as Chaya said, there are prohibitions on low-level use of low-level items, so for instance, non-felony convictions. And really, you have to tie, if you're going to not hire someone because of a criminal conviction, you need to tie it to a business necessity. You know, in addition, you probably remember in 2014, California has really been on the forefront. They had that Ban the Box initiative for public employment.
Yes, yes.
So that's folded into these new criminal history regs. So I think it's a fantastic thing from the employer side because, frankly, I think most employers want to be in compliance with the law. They just need clear instructions on what they can use, and they need fair rules. And I think that's what the Fair Employment and Housing Council is putting forward.
Will it be possible for, once these new regulations go into effect July 1st of this year, will it be possible for people to go to the council's website and see what the regulations are if they want to do their own, let's say, study or learn what the situation is if, for example, someone has had a criminal conviction?
Absolutely. The Department of Fair Employment and Housing website, which is defeh.ca.gov, has a page for the council. You can click right from the homepage to the Fair Employment and Housing Council, and the regulations will be available there. And really what it comes down to, I mean, we could talk about this for a long time, but as Joe said, it's about tailoring it and thinking about what forms of criminal history you're using. So even for the kind that aren't completely off the table to begin with, such as, you know, as we talked about, arrests that didn't lead to conviction, juvenile convictions, things like that. Let's say it's an adult conviction and it's not, you know, prohibited outright. Then really what we're getting at is that employers need to think about some key things. And the key things are the nature and gravity of the offense. Well, what were they convicted of? The second is how long ago, how much time has passed mm-hmm. since this conviction. If they were just convicted of a crime, that probably tells you something differently than if they were convicted 20 years ago and then held steady jobs with good references for 20 years.
Sure.
And the third one is the nature of the job held. So for certain convictions, that may be a very valid reason for an employer to deny employment for certain jobs, but have absolutely no bearing on, you know, their likelihood of success in other jobs. So those are the three things that employers should be looking at.
Now, if I may, because I think this is very important, the Fair Employment and Housing Department, the website is defeh.ca.gov. Is that correct?
That's right. Okay. And then if you wanted to get exactly to the council's page, it's /FEH Council. But there's a link right from that homepage of the Department of Fair Employment and Housing. And for those who don't know, that's the state civil rights agency.
Sure.
State EEOC.
The regulations you're talking about that will become effective July 1st of this year, these employers throughout the state of California will have to comply with them? I mean, this is law?
That's right. I mean,
as opposed to the legislature, these regulations are coming from where? From the council itself or from our legislature?
Well, so the legislature passes a law like the employment discrimination law.
Yes.
And it delegates to a body with expertise in that area, in our case, the council, to do the regulation. So they have the force of law because the legislature authorized the council to implement that law.
Let me throw something out to both of you here. For example, if someone was convicted of a driving under the influence, let's say alcohol, and this goes back several years ago, maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, something like that, and this person is interviewing for a position, let's say a bus driver, how would that employer, the bus company, deal with that person? As compared to, let's say, you want to be a computer programmer.
Well, Chai, do you want to take it or you want me to jump on?
Go for it, Joe.
I want both of you to jump for it.
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
Well, you know, as Chai said before, you really have to look at the nature or gravity of the offense. So, you know, what kind of level is it and what level of DUI? The time that has passed from that offense. So is it stale or is it a new offense? And then the nature of the job. The thing that gives me a lot of pause, and I've had these kind of cases come up in my practice, is if the job is a bus driver, then a fundamental or essential function of the job is driving. So I would have concerns that the conviction relates to an essential function of the job. So I think we would have problems there if it's a recent conviction, especially if it's a high-level conviction, and I think that the employer would be able to consider that. Now, you know, there are some defenses, so I think the employee, and by the way, I think this is important too, the new provisions actually require the employer to provide notice to the employee who's going to be adversely affected of that disqualifying conviction and a reasonable opportunity to, you know, present evidence that it's maybe factually inaccurate. And as someone who has a very common name, so I always jokingly say Ortiz is the likely Smith of Hispanic last names, my name comes up when there's 1,000 of us with Joe Ortiz. It's pretty common, more common than you'd probably think, for a wrong identity to be identified. I've always said it's a good idea to give that person the opportunity to, you know, unwind some things and explain whether the issue really affects the fundamental or essential functions of the job. They also may be able to show whether there's a less restrictive alternative method of addressing those concerns. So, Chai, you want to piggyback on that? Or miss anything there?
No, I think that's absolutely right, and I agree with Joe. Look, if it's a recent DUI, that has a pretty direct bearing.
When you say recent, what does that mean?
Well, so that's what I was going to bring up. You threw out 6 to 7 years, which is an interesting. I don't know that you intended that, but 7 years is actually a pretty bright line.
Is it really?
Number for employers and employees to keep in mind in California for a few reasons. Consumer credit reports, background checks that employers, often seek, are not allowed to carry conviction or criminal history information that's more than 7 years old. So,
oh, really?
And the regulations themselves, borrowing on that concept, have a presumption that things that are older than 7 years are not relevant or have lost their relevance. And in certain jurisdictions, San Francisco being one of them, there's a local ordinance that takes off older convictions that are older than 7 years off the table anyway. Mm-hmm. So 7 years is a good figure to keep in mind in California. That's not to say 6 years in a context is always right, or one year, but seven is certainly somewhat of a magic number.
I'll say this, though: the background checks, if you're using a reputable company, they wouldn't be providing stale convictions in your background check anyway.
If for example, just to go one step further, if the conviction for the driving under the influence was 8 years ago, and you've just told us about 7 years, that seems to be a dividing line, and yet this potential employer, and irrespective of what the potential job would be, if the potential employer is concerned that even though this is 8 years beyond the line, for example, What is the potential employee entitled to? I think you mentioned something has to be in writing under the new regulations, or am I wrong about that?
Well, so what Joe was mentioning, which is very important, is in addition to kind of the test of whether something, you know, will impact your job performance, we want to make sure that employees aren't having convictions they don't even have held against them.
Right.
Employers have that interest too. So there's a certain amount, as Joe mentioned, of just wrong information. So if the employer says, you know what, this conviction bothers us, we're going to use it to make a decision not to hire this person, under the regulations, they have to give notice to the person that's what's motivating their decision.
Does that have to be in writing, the notice?
You know, I think it has to be in a form of notice that, you know, writing would be suggested, certainly, because that you can establish that you've provided
notice.
Has
to be some explanation that the employee is, a potential employee, is entitled to.
Right, and that gives the employee an opportunity to correct any just factual misunderstandings. That's not necessarily their chance to appeal the decision, but it is their chance to say, well, wait a minute, your decision is based on a conviction I don't have.
And this is something new, is it right? Something, is this part of the new regulations of July 1st, 2017?
It is.
Okay. Let me do this. For those of you who may have joined us in the last few minutes, this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing this program live on June 7th. We will be taking some calls in another few minutes. If you'd like to jot down the toll-free number, 866-798-8255. My guests are both members of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. They are both, Chaya Mandelbaum, and let me spell that for you because it's a great name, but I want to spell it so that you don't be confused about it. Mandelbaum. He is the chair of the California Fair Employment and Housing Council. And my other guest, Joseph Ortiz, who is very recently a member of the council, he's also a member of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section. And one more thing before we take on our next issue that I'd like my guests to talk about, and that would be actually gender ID. I believe that's what you wanted to do, Chaya and Joe. I want you to know that our next monthly Call a Lawyer night will be on Wednesday, June 28th. I know a lot of you want to know about that. That will be at 7 p.m. Well, I'm doing the live program on the air. You, if you like it, whether you're listening to the live program or not, if you get this program delayed, you're welcome to join us. You'll be able to talk with attorneys off the air on Call a Lawyer Night. If you want to jot down the number, 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917. That'll be on June 28th at 7 p.m. So I wanted you to know that because a lot of people like to know that. What about, let's move, if you would, from criminal history, because time is going so quickly in this statewide version, which is the first half hour. What about gender ID? What are the issues there that you'd like us to know about?
Well, that's the other set of new regulations that are going to hit the books July 1st that people should be aware of. And what they are regulations that clarify the rights and responsibilities of employees, employers in the context of gender identity and expression, or transgender. What people understand this topic is in the news a lot on a national level.
Yes.
In terms of bathroom access and those types of issues. In California, it's actually a little bit more clear cut because gender identity and expression are protected categories explicitly. So it's it violates anti-discrimination laws just as clearly to prohibit someone from using a bathroom on the basis of their gender identity as it does on their race or their religion. So what the regulations mm-hmm. do is hopefully provide some clarity to both employers and employees about the protections in place for people that take on different gender identities or expressions than the one they were born with.
So in other words, I know, and I'm not sure which state it is, but it was in the last couple of days I heard on the air that a governor in one of the states, and I don't want to make a mistake by saying a state that may not be it, but a governor in a particular state, and it's not, of course, this state, California, wants his legislature to pass a law that says someone can use the bathroom here, let's say it's a gender identity or whatever it is, but only if that person has a birth certificate and that only if that person uses the bathroom in the birth certificate that says whether he or she is he or she. And that's going on right now.
Right.
Joe, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say he, she, or they.
He, she, or they, yeah, okay.
Well, California's always been on the cutting edge of providing, you know, protected categories, protection for employees, and I think this is one of the places where we're kind of leading the way. And I think Chai and I had spoken about this before. It's a hot button issue on the national front, but on the state side for practitioners in employment and labor law, we've been looking at this saying, well, you know, this just makes sense with regard to the protections that have been extended to sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression in California for a while. You'll recall last year, AB 1266, it was in the news that basically said single-user restrooms need to have that gender-neutral sign, so mm-hmm. you know, that's been folded in here. There's going to be some pushback, but I think primarily because of the national interest in this topic. There are some interesting things, like, for instance, you know, the requirement that you use the employee's requested and preferred gender, name, and pronoun. So, you know, pronoun usage is an interesting thing when you're talking about people who are in transition.
Give us an example, would you, Joe, so that we all know exactly what you're talking about?
Sure. Well, and this is one that kind of strikes me, and I'm sure some of my employer clients will have concerns about it. You know, the nomenclature for someone who's transitioning or gender fluid is oftentimes the plural form. So instead of he or she, it is they. Which the grammarian in me, you know, it gives me a gut wrench every time I hear that, but I know that we need to, you know, extend those rights. I can see employers who would be very concerned about accidentally referring to an individual by the wrong pronoun simply out of not being used to using the preferred pronoun. So I presume we're going to have some discussion about that. Although I will say in California, there's a standard. In order for it to rise to the level of being illegal, it needs to be severe and pervasive. So I don't think a slip of the tongue once is really going to create that much of an issue. But it's in the law, and so it's really going to require people to think, employers to think about, you know, talking and treating people the way they've requested to be treated.
Well, if I may, if you don't mind, let me ask you this. If someone is transitioning, a male is transitioning to a female and working in an office, and the employer is not sure about how he or she should refer to the person by either him or her or whatever, and says they, is that a potential problem?
I'll defer to Chaya. What do you think on that one?
Well, I think the best thing to do, and the regulations get at this, is to ask people what their preferred.
What would you like? How would you like me to refer to you?
Exactly. So I mean, and the regulations I think do a good job of kind of clarifying in what context you can ask these kinds of things and which mm-hmm. you can't. But that's I think pretty clearly a context in which, you know, finding out what someone's preferred pronoun usage mm-hmm. is a perfectly valid exercise. I think the regulations are primarily focused on where this is used as a form of harassment, essentially, where people are intentionally misgendering someone or using their past name as a form of harassment and getting at that getting
how
at
does
issue.
Someone if someone is the victim of this form of harassment, what's available to that person, whether it's besides perhaps going to a private attorney, but what's available? Is the Fair Employment and Housing Department a place where you can file a complaint, or what's the situation, generally speaking?
Well, I'll chime in first as
the
person who works with employers and just remind everyone that, you know, there's internal processes and policies, and human resources is probably the first internal method to try and resolve inappropriate conduct in the workplace. But then I'll kick it to Chaya, because there are other, you know, legal means to addressing it when it's not being resolved internally.
Yeah, I agree with Joe. I mean, I think at least for something like you're describing, if it's something that can be cleared up quickly by getting to someone in human resources or a well-intentioned person within the, you know, management at the employer, I think it's always great to have those lines of communication open.
Mm-hmm.
If for some reason either, you know, that's not a process that's going to alleviate the issue, or there's some real damage done and that needs to be sort of addressed and redressed, the two options for employees primarily are to contact private employment law firms that represent employees, or to contact government enforcement agencies. When you're talking about discrimination, then you're talking about the California Department of Fair Employment and Housing or the Federal's Equal Employment Opportunity Commission.
Well, we're nearly to the end of the statewide version of the program. And for those of you who are listening to the live program, we will continue. I hope you will stay with us for that. Again, our toll-free number, and we're doing this program live on June 7th, 866-798-8255. All right, everybody, here's your opportunity. If you would like to call in with a question or comment, both of my guests besides, of course, we're focusing on discrimination in the workplace and how the state of California deals with discrimination. Both of my guests are very, very experienced, although they're both fairly young. They're younger than I am, so anybody who's younger than I am is young. But in any event, they're very experienced. If you have employment law questions that you would like to pose, please feel comfortable to do so. Again, the toll-free number, 866-798-8255. Again, for those of you who have joined us perhaps late, let me tell you who my guests are. They are members of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California, Chaya Mandelbaum and Joseph Ortiz. Chaya is the chair of the California Fair Employment and Housing Council, and Joe is actually a new member of the California Fair Employment and Housing Council. Chaya is a partner in the San Francisco law firm of Rudy Axelrod Zeef and Lowe, and Joe is a partner in the Riverside law firm of Best and Krieger. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal question, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services of the San Francisco Bar, call 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. Also, one of the funders of the program is the San Mateo County Bar Association, which also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own. That's 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. A great way, if you have a problem, a legal problem, and you want some, not free, but some fast and reasonable costing advice. The lawyer referral service throughout California, most counties have bar association and lawyer referral service. You can call your own during, of course, normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll find someone who's experienced, an attorney who's experienced in the area. They'll give you a half an hour consultation with the attorney. You'll pay, with some exception in California, although minor, between $25 and $35 for that half an hour consultation. The money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep it going. It's a great service. I hope you don't need it, but it's there and available for you. Additional funding for your legal rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. So what we're going to do now, we'll start with Caroline. Caroline, welcome to the program.
Thank you. How are you?
All right. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good.
And, thanks for having this topic on.
Sure.
I'm wondering, I'm in a legal situation with a former employer, and it's a discrimination case, and finding legal help is excruciatingly painful. I have to travel from Redwood City to San Francisco for legal aid because San Mateo County doesn't offer any. Yeah, and actually they refer you to San Francisco. And then when you get there, it's those 30-minute consultations that are good. Believe me, some of them are really, really informative, but you have to do this every month to get along. And I'd like a comment from your panel. I think it's absolutely impossible for a person in pro per to go through the whole process of litigating through with a big firm like you know, any of these big employers in the city. I'd like to hear how do I do this, because I cannot afford an attorney and I have to go out of my way to get simple little help on, you know, like serving somebody or whatever, all these little things that I have to do, and time periods are another crucial thing.
You have not gone beyond the statute of limitations yet, I presume.
No,
okay.
I'm within that.
Let me get some comments for you, Caroline.
Thank you.
Is a problem, and of course, I presume you have contacted the legal aid. Have you contacted, for example, San Mateo County Legal Aid? And I'm not talking about the lawyer referral service. I'm talking about legal aid. Have you contacted?
Yes.
You have?
Yes, I have, and they've sent me down to San Francisco.
Okay. Let me see if I can get some comments for you. Please turn your radio back up. I thank you for calling, because I'm sure you've got a lot of company in this kind of thing. Joe and Chaya, what comments do you have for Caroline, who believes she has a good discrimination case, but she can't afford to hire an attorney, et cetera? Joe, what comments do you have?
Sure. Well, first, let me say I have a lot of sympathy for this. I donate some time, and I'm on the board for Riverside Legal Aid, so we have this discussion quite frequently about access to justice, in the sense that I think the commenter, Carolyn, was absolutely right that it is very difficult for someone without financial means and perhaps not reasonable access to the court system to push a matter forward. You know, fortunately, the legislature has looked at these issues. That's why the Fair Employment and Housing Act has attorney's fees provisions, and that's why there are plaintiff's attorneys who will take the case usually on contingency, with the idea that they will get those attorney's fees compensated at the end of the day, kind of as, to a certain extent, a public service to push forward with civil rights. But, you know, even with those, I do think it is an uphill battle for individuals who are pro per, who perhaps don't have as much access as they would like to the available courts or the legal aid system. And that's one reason why I think members of the bar and other members of the community should contribute and support your legal aid services.
How does someone like Caroline find an attorney who's willing to take on a case on a contingent fee case basis? Here she is. She said she could find nothing in San Mateo, no one in San Mateo County who would help her. She'd come up to San Francisco. She's had, it sounds like, at least a couple of times, maybe more than that, of half an hour consultations, but no one so far has taken on her case, Chaya. So how do you find someone who's willing to do this on a contingent fee basis, hoping that he or she, as the attorney, will be compensated under California law?
Well, certainly you're not alone. I mean, most employees, virtually all of them, cannot afford to pay an attorney, you know, by the hour to pursue
litigation. $300 or $400 an hour.
Absolutely. So we represent employees, and virtually all of them, if not all of them, we represent on a contingency fee basis.
When you say we, you're talking about your firm.
Yeah, my firm and other firms like it that represent employees. We don't. They don't pay us, our clients, our employees. We share in any amounts we're able to help recover for them.
Mm-hmm.
For that reason, obviously, we have to be very, very careful about the cases we take
well,
on.
Sure, sure.
Because we don't get paid if we don't win or at least have a settlement that's favorable for the employee.
But
one directory that I do want to call attention to that we're all on is the California Employment Lawyers Association, or CELA.org.
That's very important.
And you
CELA.org.
CELA.org, and you click on Find a CELA Member, which is one of the tabs when you get to the website.
Find a CELA Member.
Yeah, CELA Member. Find a CELA Member. And what that'll bring you to is a directory by practice area, by county, by language. And so you'll get a bunch of attorneys that specialize in employment law representing employees. And basically just call a bunch of them and see who can take your matter on a contingency fee basis. They tend to be small firms on the employee side, so you may have to make some calls, but that's the best avenue I can think of to get a contingency fee plaintiff's employment.
And don't give up. I mean, that's the point. You keep...
Well, Chuck, I'll actually piggyback on that from the employer
Please.
Side perspective. I will say it's important to vet the attorney because not all attorneys are equal. CELA is a good organization, and frankly, I will say even from the employer side, it's imperative to have good representation on both sides. It makes things, it facilitates resolution more quickly when there's competent counsel on both sides. So, I wholeheartedly agree with what Chai is saying as far as, looking for the right person for you and going to a reputable organization to find competent counsel.
So, Caroline, I hope you got this. CELA.org, and then find a go to the thing, the section that says find a CELA member, CELA member, and then you got your homework. You got to start calling and see who will be willing to do this, and hopefully that will help you. CELA stands for what again?
California Employment Lawyers Association.
So there you are, Caroline. I hope that's of some help to you. At some point in the future, I'd like you to let me know that actually you can call KLW, leave a message for me if you would. Let me know if you're making some progress. I would like to know that. For those of you, by the way, in San Mateo County, on Wednesday, this is next week, June 14th at noon, the San Mateo County Law Library will have a free lecture entitled Estate Planning 101, Learn the Basics of Estate Planning. This is again on Wednesday, June 14th at noon, from noon to 1. The presentation will be by attorney Nicole Warmerdam, that's Warmerdam, and she is a California Board of Legal Specialization certified specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law. So whether you're in San Mateo County or anywhere in the Bay Area and you would like to attend this free lecture, you're invited at the Law Library, 710 Hamilton Street in Redwood City. That's 710 Hamilton Street in Redwood City, across the street from the Hall of Justice. My former, well, I still go there. I still volunteer in the DA's office there in the same building. If you'd like some further information, the Law Library number, if you'd like to jot this down, 650-363-4913, 650-363-4913, or visit online at www.smclawlibrary.org. SMC standing for San Mateo County. smclawlibrary.org. Okay, let's go to our next listener, who is Lindsay. And by the way, Lindsay, before you say anything, if you don't mind, let me give the toll-free number again. It's 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Please feel free to call in with your employment law question, whether you are an employee or an employer or a prospective employee. Feel comfortable. And Lindsay, you're now on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure.
I am curious to hear a little bit about where the line really is around what constitutes harassment. Related to disability, or basically, I understand that if you have a doctor's note about something that needs to be made accommodation for, that accommodation is required to be made. But what happens if it's made, but also it seems like targeting is happening towards someone asking for accommodation.
When you say be a little bit more specific, Lindsay.
I can tell you, a friend of mine at work had a situation where someone from 3 or 4 levels up in the organization came to him and asked if his numbers justified him having the special accommodation. And to me, that sort of...
If his
performance metrics...
Oh, I got it.
...justified the investment...
I see.
...in an accommodation. And I still sits with me only because it is an accommodation that I was planning to ask for and had a doctor's note for, but then became sort of, I had a sense of a lack of safety around pursuing that accommodation, given that I'm in the same reporting structure. And I did try to pursue this internally. It just didn't go anywhere internally. So I guess my question is to hear a little bit more about, like, what the enforceable lines are here, or what kind of recourse.
Lindsay, have you seen an attorney, by the way?
No, absolutely not. I mean, it's
well,
not
I wish you would. Now, let me help you on this if I can. Give you some thought, and then maybe my guests will also have something to suggest. I see that you're calling from Oakland. I presume you're a resident of Oakland?
Yeah.
And do you have are you employed in Oakland?
No.
Oh, you're not. Where are you employed? What city?
In San Francisco.
In San Francisco. Well, you have available to you, and I think you should explore this, frankly, the lawyer referral service either of Alameda County or San Francisco. The Alameda County Bar Association, if you'd like to jot down this number, is 510-302-2222, 510-302-2222. And ask for the lawyer referral. For San Francisco, that's the number I gave before, 415-989-1616. I think at this point, since you are worried about maybe some kind of retaliation or whatever it may be, I think you owe it to yourself to try to get an appointment with an attorney, an attorney who represents employees, for half an hour consultation. You'll pay, I think, in either... lawyer referral service, $35, and it'll give you something that might give you some better feeling of what you should do. Chaya, what comments do you have for Lindsay?
Well, I'll be curious to hear it from Joe's perspective, too, as the employer. I mean, I think you raised some interesting things. When you talk about disability, there's really three components. There's the right to accommodations, reasonable accommodations, and an interactive process to find.
This is California law.
This is California law.
Reasonable accommodation, yeah.
Right, and then there's also discrimination in general. You can't discriminate against people with disabilities, treat them differently, or harass them. And then the third is retaliation. You can't retaliate against an employee for seeking an accommodation or making requests related to their disability.
By demoting them or maybe even firing them
or
doing something that puts them, separating them in some other room by themselves or whatever.
Right. So what what Lindsay's mentioning that is concerning to me from the perspective of a council that represents employees is if her employer is employing a different metric for the disabled employee. So there's the first analysis of whether an accommodation is reasonable. Is it too costly for the employer? But it sounds like in this case, her friend, got the accommodation. It was deemed that was a reasonable accommodation. And then, of course, the person has to perform. But if they're being held to a different standard, if the employer is expecting higher metrics than they would from a non-disabled employee that doesn't have an accommodation, that's a real problem for
me. That seems unreasonable.
Yeah. I'd be curious to hear it from Joe's perspective.
Joe,
but to
please.
Me, that sounds like a violation.
Sure. Well, I think I agree. In my mind, I divided it in two fashions. You've got the reasonable accommodation, interactive process, grab bag. But you're right. It does sound like that there was an interactive process and the accommodation, reasonable accommodation, was provided. So we don't really have an issue there. But the real issue then would be discrimination or retaliation. So, you know, typically it's got to rise to the level of unreasonably interfering with your ability to perform. So you look at the severity and the pervasiveness of these comments. I'll tell you a comment like, you know, does this person's numbers, do they justify this accommodation, is very problematic. From my perspective, so you know that there's this burden-shifting analysis that happens in these types of cases. So the employee comes in and says, hey, I've been subject to disability discrimination. There's a hostile work environment that's created because of my disability. You know, that shifts the burden to the employer to show a legitimate business purpose for its decisions. Then that shifts that burden shifts back to the employee to show that these stated reasons for these actions were discriminatory, that there was actual pretext. They were pretextual, and there was really discrimination as the basis for the decisions. These kinds of statements, the statements that you're saying, if they can be proved, scare me as, from the employer's perspective, as good evidence of pretext and good evidence to start pushing, you know, that kind of cause of action. So that would give me a lot of pause, and if it were my client, where these issues and these facts came forward, I'd have a long discussion with them about these types of comments.
With regard to what Lindsay is concerned about, if she has been told something or overheard something that may relate to her decision of whether or not she wants to ask for reasonable accommodation, I would think it would be very wise for her to keep some notes, dates, and put some notes down of who said what, when, where, etc. And I would suggest, Lindsay, I've been a consumer advocate for many years. I've been a deputy district attorney, San Mateo County. I'm now in my, believe it or not, 33 years, although in the last 3 years I have been a volunteer deputy DA. But I've been in consumer protection for a long time. I've been a lawyer much longer than 33 years. I think since you work in San Francisco, I think you owe it to yourself to call the lawyer referral service for the San Francisco Bar, since you are there during the day working, and try to set up an appointment to meet with an employment law attorney who represents employees. But also, I would suggest it would be fine to find out if the particular employment law attorney deals with discrimination. Chaya, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think using those services or CELA, as I mentioned, are good ones. And I think most attorneys you talk to through CELA, I'm less familiar with lawyer referral service, but you know, they'll chat with you for a few minutes and get a sense if there's a claim or what it would take before there's a claim that they could pursue. But certainly I agree with keeping notes and kind of documenting, because that to me sounds problematic. It doesn't necessarily sound like harassment to me. I think that's the wrong legal term to use. It sounds more like discrimination or retaliation.
Mm-hmm. I see. So did that help you, Lindsay, to figure out where you may be going next?
Yeah, it did. I mean, I don't even want to pursue this. It just made me quite uncomfortable. And in the end, the thing that matters to me is that there is some sort of a process for creating more safety in the future.
Well, that's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. You know, that to me was the disappointment here, is not feeling that safety for my friend, and then not really, just noticing about the culture that, though I went through the kind of standard paths for talking about this with people inside the company, but there wasn't any action taken. I almost wonder if that is maybe the thing that for me feels more important. But this is really valuable for me to just think
through. Well, I think you need... There
might be a big difference between the way the company is talking about it and the way a lawyer might talk about it.
It may be. But you got down the CELA.org website, did you not?
Thank you.
Okay, and also Department of Fair Employment and Housing website, where you can get more information, as Chaya gave that before, dfeh.ca.gov. That's also very helpful. I think at this point, since this is really, if I may suggest this to you, really bothering you, whether you follow through or not with trying to get what you think you may desire, a reasonable accommodation, I think to help you understand what your rights are and what you may be able to be able to do, I think you owe it to yourself to follow through and either try to contact a lawyer through CELA.org or some other source of whether it's the some other website or lawyer referral. But I think it's very important for you to do this, and you'll feel better.
Thank you.
So I'm gonna give the phone number again and see if we can take another call or two. And good luck to you. And turn your radio back up, because I think at this point Chaya is going to make some further comment.
Yeah, well, just on the topic of disability, there are a lot of great organizations that specialize in these issues in the Bay Area or around California. So Disability Rights Advocates or Disability Rights California. I don't have their websites available mm-hmm. off the top of my head, but they're mm-hmm. easy to Google. So those are good ones to talk through these issues, because they specialize, you know, specifically in these types of disability issues that come up.
So one of these entities is Disability Rights California. Is that the name of it?
That is.
There's another one for you, Lindsay, so I hope that's of some help to you. Our toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. By the way, for those of you who may have missed some of the program, I just want to let you know that if you want to hear the entire hour, it is available as a podcast free of charge. If you'd like to jot down, we're giving you all kinds of web addresses now, www.kalw.org/subscribe, SUBSCRIBE. That's a free podcast of the full program at www.kalw.org/subscribe. All right, and then what would we have? Go ahead.
So just while we have a few minutes, Joe and I will be in San Francisco for the council meeting on July 17th, which is at the California Public Utilities Commission right on Van Ness, July 17th. And what we'll be talking about, amongst other topics, is a hearing on new regulations that are in the works related to national origin discrimination.
Ah.
And so this will be the opportunity for members of the public to come to a meeting, tell us their perspective on the draft regulations and their experience in the area, and have it really be, you know, digested and listened to by council members in the course of finishing draft regulations.
Where will you be again on July 17th?
We'll be in the auditorium of the California PUC, the CPUC building, which is right on Van Ness. I don't have the address.
Yeah, all right.
Right by City Hall.
Right by City Hall. Oh, sure. And is there a website that people can go to find out more about the July 17th council meeting?
Absolutely. It's the same one. It's dfeh.ca.gov.
Yeah.
And then if, you know, you can either put /FEH council or just from that first page, click on the council's, you know, link, and it'll bring you to the regulations and it'll bring you to the schedule of meetings. So there's some very interesting regulations talking about national origin discrimination in a variety of contexts, like English-only policies or accent discrimination or immigration-related topics. So that's the kinds of big-picture topics we're addressing.
What's the time period for this meeting? When does it start, and how long do you expect it will last?
It'll start at 10 in the morning and, mm-hmm. and probably go till 4 or so.
Wow. Okay.
The schedule hasn't been finalized, but 10 days before the meeting, if you mm-hmm. check on the webpage, the agenda will be posted.
So there you are. If you want to find out more about it, go to dfeh.ca.gov, and you can go to the Fair Employment and Housing Council, and you'll find out more about it. But again, it's going to be on July 17th, starting at 10 a.m. So All right, people, maybe they're watching some game tonight or something.
Right, if anyone could call in with an NBA final score for me, that would be very appreciated.
Oh, that's wonderful. Maybe we'll get more calls with the NBA finals on it. All right, we have a few minutes left. If someone does have a question about employment law and you'd like to call in, we only have probably, I would say, a couple of minutes left, but we can try to accommodate you if you'd like to call. The toll-free number, 866-798-8255. Also, I want to mention to you a couple of things, since this program is uplinked by the National Public Radio satellite through the funding of the National Board of Trial Advocacy. I want to give you its website address in case you're looking to find out more about the National Board of Trial Advocacy. That's www.nbtalawyers.org. They have some specialties there. The California Board of Legal Specialization has 11 specialties, in case you're interested. That website is www.calbar.ca.gov. Go to the upper left-hand corner of your screen for legal specialists. Click that on, and you'll find out in your county who the specialists are in any one of 11 areas. We have now 1 minute left. And I know we have someone on the line. Martin, if you can bring that person's name here very quickly so that we can at least get the question and make a shot at an answer, I think that would be great because we don't have much time. Let me see. We have Ann. Welcome very quickly, Ann. What's your question?
Hey, hi. I'm calling because I'm curious about the implications of having an employer record a discussion, a one-on-one meeting using their cell phone without permission.
Oh, let me get a comment. Using the cell phone to record this without permission?
Correct.
All right, let me see if I can get a comment. Turn your radio back up. Chai, do you have anything on this?
Well, that's kind of an easy one in California because it's a criminal matter under privacy laws. California is what's called a two-party consent state. So if someone is recording you in a context that you're unaware they're recording in it, and you have a reasonable expectation of privacy, like a one-on-one conversation in an office, that's not okay, you know, both in the workplace and elsewhere.
So there you are, and who would she report this to? The local police or what?
Well, I mean, as a practical matter, I don't know how high on the list of crimes it is for DA's offices, Chuck, but it certainly is a violation of privacy as far as employment.
And
you might
want to actually file a complaint with your local county DA's office about that and see how they respond.
Well, this is Joe. I'll just chime in too.
Very quickly, Joe. You've got about 10 seconds.
From the employer's perspective, if the person's recording surreptitiously, it's probably done without management's approval. I'd probably look to HR first to really discuss whether they should have been doing that in the first place and hopefully remedy the situation.
We have come to the end of the hour, and I want to thank both of you very much for joining us on the program. Chaya Mandelbaum and Joseph Ortiz, members of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Chaya, Chair of the California Fair Employment and Housing Council, and Joe, a member of the California Fair Employment and Housing Council. Thank you both very much. It's been great to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me, Chuck.
Next time on Your Legal Rights, our program will be on the rights of employees under the National Labor Relations Act regarding unions, wages, hours, and working conditions. My guest will be Jill Kaufman, Regional Director of the National Labor Relations Board in San Francisco, Bruce Harland, an attorney who represents union members, and Thomas Lenz, Vice Chair of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, and an attorney who represents employers. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McClain. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights was made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California and by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program for national distribution. Thank you for listening to Your Legal Rights, and I hope you join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.
Thank you.